Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Hi, this is Alan Chartok here with Chris Gibson, who's running for Congress in the 19th District. When we spoke the last time, Chris, we were talking about what's going on in the ISIS fight. You said there was something a little bit more complicated that you wanted to take a chance with.
All right, Alan. And what I laid out last time were my 3 points that I think we should be doing immediately to deal with the Islamic State, and that is helping the Iraqi armed forces and the Kurds to defeat the Islamic State in Iraq. That will neutralize their military capability and also disrupt their ability to do anything globally because they're dealing with the situation in Iraq. Then I talked about how we need to build a political foundation in Syria. And the reason why is at this point, we haven't set the conditions for successful action. We're arming these so-called moderate rebels who are militarily incompetent and politically untrustworthy. And, you know, the whole point was to have a ground element to help the air attacks be successful. But yet we're not expected to have these rebels prepared for 8 to 12 months. Yet we've begun the bombing campaign, concerned about that. And then finally, I thought that given their expressed position to attack us, we should take more action to secure our borders. I think that will not only give more confidence to Americans here, but will set the conditions for fixing our broken immigration system, which is a major issue before us that we need to get done. And then I said that there are other things we need to do longer term that will help the world reach more stability and peace. And this really gets to the concept of deterrence. And if you think about what is deterrence, big books have been written, dissertations, folks argue that it's very complex, and it can be. I actually maintain you can distill that down to two factors, capability and will. But before I get into that, let me just give a more simplistic definition of deterrence, just to get our arms around it. You know, why does North Korea not attack South Korea? Because they're good guys? Well, there's no evidence of that. North Korea doesn't attack South Korea because they believe that at the end of the day, the costs outweigh the benefits. And the same can be said, why does Iran not launch an attack on Israel? Because they like Israel? Well, there's no evidence of that. But they believe that ultimately the costs will outweigh the benefits. And we could go on here. But the point is that when you talk about deterrence, it really gets down to a hedonistic definition of costs and benefits. And the best way to address this, in my view, is to restore peace through strength by reasserting deterrence. And the way to do that is these two variables, capability and will. And if you have capability and you don't have will, you don't have deterrence. And if you have will and you don't have capability, you don't have deterrence. And this is, in my view, why we're having an issue in Ukraine and why we're having an issue in the economic struggle in Africa and issues with Iran and even with issues with North Korea.
We need a definition of will.
So will is that video equals audio. That what you say you will do, that there is a wide perception among the percipient that you will follow through. So what we're really getting down to here is what is called in the lexicon compellence. And that is that you are showing your hand in a way that says what you're doing is unacceptable. We prefer to resolve this peacefully, but you know we have the capability. You know we have the capability because we showed it to you. This is my point on restoring capability. And in earlier shows, I think dating back a year ago, I argued that we need to think and act differently. And if we do, instead of trying to be the world's policeman, if we go through comprehensive national security establishment reform, where we are leading with our strengths being our ideas, as instantiated in our founding documents. On our best day, other countries want to be like us.
But if you take a look at Ukraine, for example, you're exactly right. We say, you know, to the Russians, don't do it. We come up with some stuff. But there's no real proof that we have the will to stop it, right?
Well, you're exactly. I mean, the issue we're having in Eastern Europe is an erosion of what's our perceived will and, quite frankly, what is perceived as lessening capability because we have been at war. Now for over a dozen years, and we have had atrophying, and that atrophying has been perceived in terms of the kit for our military and how the wear and tear on our service members and their families. That is the perception. And then when you see that with the naturally reticent perspective of the American people to continue to be involved in these policing actions, this is all eroding our deterrence, which is, in my view, fueling some of the instability in the world. So this is not going to be fixed overnight. In the last show, I laid out 3 points that I think we need to do right now to protect us. And by the way, as a commander-in-chief, that's what has to be communicated, I think, is just that in this very uncertain world that we're going to take action to keep us safe. But we're going to do it in a smart way, in a real smart way that does it in a manner that's most efficient, most effective. And in my view, if we do it differently, I think we can actually save money.
Okay. So number one, you've always been opposed, really, to putting boots on the ground. But you say we do it
can't
smart.
Can't rule it out. Here's the point. Yeah. You're right. I mean, because what you can't do is, I think, when you end up trying to be the world's policeman, you don't end up safer. And it costs us, it's prohibitive. We've spent trillions of dollars now using this approach, what some ascribe as the neoconservative approach, which is trying to make us safer by converting democracies one step at a time, often by using military force. I reject that approach. At the same time, what you can't do if you're trying to restore peace through strength, you can't tell other nations what you won't do. So when you're trying to deter would-be adversaries, they need to have the belief that you have the capability to bring a resolution to this, even if necessary, by force, and they have to believe that you would do that. And part of this is persuasion. You have to bring your friends and allies along to stand with you with a sense of resolve. So when the commander-in-chief says, we're going to keep you safe, what that means is that if the Islamic State, if our intelligence community learns of a specific, credible threat, that they're going to attack our country, we will use any force necessary to protect us. So when you say, well, we're not going to use ground troops, well, what if we learn of a specific credible threat that would be launched on the United States, maybe even on one of our cities, possibly even in our region?
You mean by terrorism?
Yes. And the commander-in-chief has to keep everything on the table, because what has to be known is that we will protect our people. But once you make that statement and the global community believes you, then the question recurs, what's the smart way of going forward? And that's when I go back to my 3 points that I mentioned yesterday. But longer term, what we need to be doing is, the intelligence community has grown threefold since 9/11. The point is that the left hand doesn't even know what the right hand's doing. We need reform of the intelligence community. It's grown too big and too cumbersome, and they don't. I mean, you look what happened with the Christmas Day bomber of 2009. We had a situation where the father called our country and said, "My son, I don't recognize him. He's talking crazy. I think he could attack your country." And our intelligence community knew that, and we never actioned on it because it was so stovepiped. And then when you look at the way we array our Department of Defense, we are laid down with headquarters all over the world, combatant commands all over the world. We could pass a test that we're a republic, not an empire. But the fact of the matter is, we evidence an empire with a lot of our actions, and that's what matters is how it's perceived. I argue we should consolidate all those headquarters, tens and hundreds of billions of dollars, back to a joint forces command in the United States. Now, you're still going to need a forward presence of a Navy for assurance of open lanes, sea lanes, and markets. But what the concept that we should be using going forward for deterrence is strategic maneuver. The ability to project forces, if necessary, support them, and bring conflict resolution rapidly on our terms, where we can transition to peace.
And be willing to use them.
And show an ability. Once you restore this capability, then you exercise it. And you invite your friends and adversaries alike to see it, so that they know we're not bluffing, that we have this capability. That strengthens the hands of diplomats. And that's what helps bring back peace through strength.
Always learned so much from you, Chris Gibson. It's great to talk to you. Chris Gibson is the Republican congressman from New York's 19th district. Again, Chris, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.